Iran says a breakthrough on the revival of the 2015 deal is possible if other signatories to the accord provide guarantees that Tehran enjoys its economic benefits. The Ukrainian president says missile strikes on southern port of Odessa shows Russia cannot be trusted to implement a deal signed to unblock grain exports from the Black Sea ports. And the former US President Donald Trump condemns the congressional hearing on last year's attack on the US Capitol, calling the testimonies total fiction. Thank you for joining us. Iran's president says a breakthrough on the revival of the 2015 deal is possible if other signatories to the accord provide guarantees that Tehran enjoys its economic benefits. Raisi made the remarks during a phone call with his French counterpart, Emmanuel Macron. The Iranian president noted that negotiations will bear fruits if the parties to the JCPOA uphold their obligations. Raisi also slammed a recent anti-Iran resolution by the IAEA's Board of Governors, saying the move damaged political trust. He further said U.S. sanctions on Iran are detrimental to the global economy. The French president, for his part, vowed to continue efforts to help parties to the talks reach an agreement. Iran says it has arrested a network of agents working for the Israeli Mossad spy agency. In a statement, Iran's intelligence ministry said the network's members entered the country from Iraq Kurdistan region while carrying advanced equipment and strong explosives. The ministry added its forces arrested them before they were able to carry out acts of sabotage and terrorist operations in Iran's sensitive locations. Israeli intelligence services have a history of direct involvement in terrorist acts against the Islamic Republic. The regime has been behind many terror attacks and other sabotaging acts inside Iran. Today marks the anniversary of the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientist Dariush Rezai Nejad. He was fatally shot 5 times in front of his home. 11 years on, and an award-winning movie depicts how the events unfolded in the lead up to his assassination, as seen by his wife. Gisu Misha Ahmadi reports from Tehran.
We all remember her from pictures. At the time that her father was assassinated, Armita Rezai Nejad was only 5. Her mother, Shohrat Pirani, was also wounded in the attack. Today, her story has found its way on the silver screen, revealing new dimensions of how Dariush Rezai Nejad was martyred. What made the ordeal even tougher was the fact that Dariush was shot right in front of his wife and his 5-year-old daughter. The international community, human rights advocates, and even the UN remained silent. This prompted Shohrat Pirani to write a letter to then-U.S. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, denouncing in the strongest terms the assassination of researchers and scientists. Her move inspired a group of filmmakers to make a movie based on the story.
About 5 or 6 years ago, we decided to make this movie. I believe that as filmmakers, we had a responsibility to do so.
This is a very important part of our contemporary history. It's a story that just had to be told. It should have been done sooner.
I was preoccupied by this incident for years. How can you kill someone right in front of his 5-year-old kid? I did some research, and as soon as the opportunity came up, we decided to make the movie.
Hanas, which literally means breath, is a biopic that dramatizes the story of Dariush Rezai Nejad, a nuclear scientist that was assassinated in 2011.
This movie is actually a document that shows how Iran has been a victim of terror attacks. There aren't many countries in which such brutal terror attacks have happened. The assassination of a scientist and researcher while his family is watching.
This was a very educational movie showing us the animosity of Israel and the United States.
I found it to be an educational movie, both important and interesting.
I learned a lot. It was very interesting.
The feminine touch has turned this biopic into a must-see, and now, in an open letter, Armita has called on all foreign ambassadors in Iran to watch the movie, too.
In the words of Armita, the daughter of the martyred scientist Dariush Rezai Nejad, Iranian or non-Iranian, everyone should watch this movie just to catch a glimpse of the atrocities and human rights violations that are committed against the Iranian people, while the international community remains silent. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Ukraine says missile strikes on the southern port of Odessa shows Russia cannot be trusted to implement a grain deal the two countries signed on Friday.
Today, a large number of missile strikes were launched against Ukraine. For us, it's already commonplace, unfortunately. Russia, no matter what it says and promises, will find ways not to implement it, geopolitically, with weapons, bloodily or not. It has several vectors, as it always acts.
Zelensky made the comments during a meeting with a number of U.S. lawmakers in Kiev. He said the proof attacks one thing. No matter what Russia says and promises, it will find ways not to implement it. Ukrainian president says Russia targeted the key Black Sea terminal by cruise missiles, describing the attack as a spit in the face of the Turkish president and the UN chief. But Moscow says it has nothing to do with it. The attack came just a day after Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Antonio Guterres brokered the agreement in a bid to unblock grain exports from Black Sea ports. Earlier, we reached out to historian and political commentator Marcos Papadopoulos for his take on the Russia-Ukraine war. He believes the U.S. is using the Ukrainian government as a tool against Russia. Let's take a listen.
Well, for 30 years, Russia asked, told, warned the United States not to extend its tentacles to Ukraine, because Ukraine is of paramount importance to Russian national security, and also Ukraine is integral to the Russian national identity. But alas, the Americans disregarded what the Kremlin told them for 30 years, and that is why we are confronted now with a war between Ukraine and Russia. If there is to be a peace treaty secured between Kiev and Moscow, then the Americans have to tell their puppets in Kiev, and let's be very clear, that Zelensky and the rest of the Ukrainian government are puppets of Washington. Washington must tell Kiev that a military victory against Russia is an impossibility. But regrettably, America cares nothing for the Ukrainian population. To America, the Ukrainian population is merely a tool, is merely a weapon to use against Russia.
Meanwhile, Hungary urges the EU to change its strategy on Ukraine, saying Western sanctions on Moscow have failed.
Western strategy on Ukraine has failed as governments in Europe are collapsing like dominoes. Energy prices have surged. A new strategy is needed, which should focus on peace talks and drafting a good peace proposal instead of winning the war.
The Hungarian Prime Minister says the sanctions were aimed at destabilizing Russia's leadership in the war. He says, however, Ukraine will never win the war this way since the Russian army has asymmetric dominance. Viktor Orban says the war can come to an end only through peace talks between Russia and the U.S. Orban stressed that Hungary is unwilling to support the EU's limitations on Russia's gas imports. He warned that this would undermine European economy. The bloc has imposed a wave of sanctions on Russia targeting its key sectors. Record high temperatures are causing France to take increasingly drastic measures amid the West's sanctions campaign against Russia. Citizens are being asked to conserve power, with energy cuts this winter already being called a certainty. Ramin Mazahiri has more from Paris.
Due to their decision to sanction Russia over the unrest in Ukraine, France and the European Union are desperately trying to build energy stocks ahead of this winter. However, a record heat wave has created a surge in energy consumption, and that's prompted the government to informally call for the rationing of electricity. Citizens have been pushed to make an effort by cutting off Wi-Fi, unplugging appliances, and going without air conditioning. Many in poor neighborhoods say they expect their streets to go dark earlier and for their social services to be affected first. The West's sanctions campaign against Russia continues to force the average household into paying a steep price.
It's very difficult to see this crisis getting better by 2023. Finding alternative sources for gas and petrol will cause higher prices. Renewable energy will be more expensive. France isn't a big coal producer. France is already depleting its petrol and gas stocks. So every choice away from Russian energy is going to increase energy prices.
In order to have more control over the national energy grid, this week the government announced that they will totally renationalize the company Electricity of France. The energy giant runs all of the nation's nuclear power plants.
Nuclear power provides nearly 70% of France's energy, the most of any country in the world. But a recent series of outages have caused nuclear power output to drop to its lowest level in nearly 30 years.
Leaders of French energy corporations recently said that energy cuts are certain for this winter and that prolonged cold spells may threaten social and political cohesion. A proposal to give the European Union the right to impose mandatory gas rationing across the bloc's 27 member countries was immediately shot down by the nations of Southern Europe this week. They called it the farthest-reaching power grab by Brussels this year. And it was especially controversial because individual national vetoes were not allowed under an emergency procedure employed by the leaders of the European Union. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The European Central Bank steps in uncharted territory in the face of runaway inflation that used to be seen when the euro did not exist. Hashtag trending is next with social media users' reactions to the story.
Hello everyone and welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Reza. The economic outlook for the 19-member Eurozone is weakening and it's causing the policymakers a headache. And now for the first time since 2011, the European Central Bank has risen interest rates to tackle runaway inflation. In a surprise move, the ECB pushed its base rate up by 0.5 percentage points after economists expected a smaller 0.25 point rise. The bank says the increase was necessary after a surge in food and fuel prices that show no signs of easing in the next few months at least. Recession concerns, on the other hand, have helped push the euro to a 20-year low against the dollar, which adds to the ECB's inflation-fighting tasks by worsening the already high energy prices. Now, this is while many believe that with the chaotic situation in Italy and the ongoing war in Ukraine, the ECB policies are doomed to failure. Our first tweet of the day comes from ProShare. Global economy. For the first time in 11 years, ECB on Thursday raised its benchmark deposit rate by 50 basis points to 0%. The EU's record high inflation, 8.6% in June, forced the ECB to end its 8-year experiment with negative interest rates. Prudent Harry has our next tweet. We are becoming increasingly more aware of the ECB, their failed policies over the last decade and Thursday's power grab. Inflation hasn't peaked. The Italy situation is now back in play and the Ukraine mess isn't going very well for the EU governments. The mood over here is very foul. Alastair MacLeod said the ECB's deposit rate rise to zero was no more than an attempt to stabilize the euro, but the ECB is still hooked on monetary inflation, promising to print unlimited credit to support the pigs, which is an acronym that refers to the economy of southern European states. It won't save the euro and the euro system. Enron Bagholder has our next tweet. We have 17.2% inflation and 7% interest rates here in the Czech Republic, and I am still glad we don't have euro here. The ECB is a joke, and Lagarde is too busy buying Hermes bags instead of doing something. Social media users seem doubtful about the ECB policies as they see policymakers walking a fine line between easing price pressures and drawing the European economy into a recession. Analysts are questioning how high the bank can raise rates before the economic outlook deteriorates too much and the bank has to stop. Let's move on to our next batch of comments. Alex Balfour said, I will be proven wrong if A, EU puts through a full fiscal union, B, inflation abates later this year, C, unemployment in EU falls, D, there is no geopolitical issue, E, ECB and EU banks fully recapitalize. I'm convinced not one of these will happen, hence my pessimism. Evelyn Omar Nuffer said, if most of the causes of inflation are global and outside the Eurozone, it is doubtful whether interest rate hikes of the ECB will reduce inflation to 2%. It can help to counter investments without a sustainable future. Throw Me Apples has our next tweet. Europe, quote, Europe has a serious import inflation problem. Controlling the devaluation of the euro against the dollar is essential. It should be an absolute priority of the ECB, end quote. It was exploding even before they poked the Russian mama bear. Euro can have devastating consequences. Jordi Alexander said, Europe is in turmoil with the incompetent ECB in a spot where all it can do is bluff that things are under control and pray. Entering recession by winter and with Italy inching closer each cycle to self-immolating, facing plus 8% inflation, the Italian bond bluff will get called. And that's a wrap for another Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump has condemned the congressional hearing on the U.S. Capitol assault, calling the testimony total fiction. Trump made the remarks in a dwelling rally in Arizona ahead of an upcoming Republican primary election. The former president has been accused of a gross dereliction of presidential duty during an attack on the Capitol Hill. Trump supporters attacked the Congress building when the lawmakers were certifying Joe Biden's victory. During the eighth hearing of the probe, top aides of the former president gave out their testimonies, saying the then president was watching the attack unfold and ignored his advisors' calls to take action. Trump's former strategist Steve Bannon was also found guilty of contempt of Congress. The panel plans to reconvene for more hearings in September.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Opposition to expansion of NATO, which harbors some wishes of establishing a presence in the Central Asia region, and also the imminent danger of Daesh's revival in Afghanistan, something which would threaten Iran and Russia's borders, are among the areas of commonality between Moscow and Tehran these days that can pave the way for new areas of cooperation. We now present you an article written by Alireza Hojati, a journalist and an international relations commentator. The piece is titled, Farewell to the United States, Welcome to New World Order. Tripartite meeting of the heads of the three guarantor states of the Astana peace process, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran, Russia and Turkey in Tehran, is strongly indicative of the political weight of regional and trans-regional actors in connection with the new security architecture of West Asia, as it took place only a few days after US President Joe Biden's first visit to the region. Israeli newspaper Haaretz even wrote in an analysis published on 14th of July that Iran's supreme leader will determine if Biden's West Asia trip succeeds. Although Biden told leaders of six countries of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, PGCC, that is Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, and the United Arab Emirates, plus Jordan, Egypt, and Iraq, at a summit in Saudi Arabia's Red Sea city of Jeddah on Saturday, 16th of July, that the United States will not walk away from West Asia and leave a vacuum to be filled by Russia, China, or Iran. There is almost no one in the region to accept such rhetoric as true. The Arab states of the Persian Gulf region and West Asia actors are closely monitoring unfolding developments in Afghanistan and in Ukraine, in addition to America's behavior towards them. This explains why regional actors have set realism high on their agenda, and Arab states don't really want to put all their eggs in the basket of weakened Washington, and are instead following the policy of détente and cooperation with Iran, at the same time as maintaining good relations with both Russia and China. It is obvious that Tehran and its partners have attained significant achievements against Washington out of the seventh summit of the Astana peace talks on Syria, which hosted Vladimir Putin of Russia and Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey. Syria is a clear example of victory of this alliance over the United States and its Western allies. And the Russo-Iranian-Syrian initiative now determines the path that the Damascus government should tread. The Syrian conflict is among the most successful models of cooperation between Iran and Russia in terms of foreign policy. The grave crisis in Syria created a perception among Russian officials that Moscow should attach greater significance to Tehran's standpoints as regards its calculations in West Asia. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian wrote in his book, The Levant Morning, that he and the former Deputy Foreign Minister for Arab and African Affairs started negotiations with Russian authorities on the latter's involvement in Syria. Amir Abdollahian went on to cite then-Russian ambassador to Iran as saying that talks on Syria acted as a catalyst for the promotion of bilateral diplomatic relations between Moscow and Tehran and opened a new chapter for mutual cooperation. The top Iranian diplomat further alluded to comments made by a Russian security official that Moscow finally concluded that Iranians have strongly supported their allies in the region for years, have not changed their approach even in the face of major US campaigns and threats, and that it is Iran and its allies that have played an important role in regional developments and obtained acceptable results eventually. The Russian official remarked, "By examining Iran's behavior in Afghanistan, Iraq, Lebanon, and Palestine, we came to the conclusion that Bashar al-Assad will remain in office, and Tehran gets its own way in the end." The Astana process's main agenda lies in provision of support for and protection of Syria's territorial integrity, fighting terrorism, and provision of support for establishment of a ceasefire. Over the past weeks, the most important speculation and news items in this regard have been the prospect of a Turkish operation against Kurds in northern Syria, some speculation concerning reduction of the Russian military presence in Syria, and simultaneous increase in the resistance axis's weight there, and the Israeli regime's intense concerns about this, and unprecedented tension in Moscow-Tel Aviv relations. However, it can be expected that Vladimir Putin would hold important meetings with senior Iranian officials, especially given the fact that the aspects of the country's military cooperation has prompted concern and ire in the White House. Iran and Russia share a common perspective concerning the sanctions that the United States has leveled against both countries, Iran's nuclear agreement, revisionism in the current order, and international unilateralism. This common perspective paves the way for the country's cooperation. These areas of commonality are of such importance in the Kremlin foreign policy apparatus assessments that have seen Vladimir Putin meet with Iranian President Dr. Ebrahim Raisi on three occasions in Moscow, in Ashgabat and in Tehran over the past 6 months. Moscow's approval of Iran's membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, and its negative vote against the anti-Iranian resolution at the International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors can be interpreted and analyzed in the same light. Moscow has even assessed Iran as a country that is competent enough to join the BRICS group. Opposition to the expansion of NATO, which harbors some wishes of establishing a presence in the Central Asia region, and also the imminent danger of Daesh's revival in Afghanistan, something which would threaten both Iran and Russia's borders, are among other areas of commonality between Tehran and Moscow these days that can pave the way for new areas of cooperation. Over the past month, the heads of the Central Asian countries, including the heads of state in Tajikistan, Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan, have travelled to Iran and inked many bilateral agreements, to the point that Iran has even inaugurated its UAV manufacturing factory in Tajikistan. These are all indications that prove Russia considers Iran to be of a special role and is eyeing to entrench and reinforce Iran's foothold in the region in order to eliminate the aforementioned threats as part of the Central Asia and South Caucasus dossier, which international relations theoreticians lay emphasis on in the discussions that concern transition in the world order from the Atlantic to the Pacific.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and how about enlightening our minds with the words of guidance from Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Our affairs are attached to the destiny decreed by Allah, and on the contrary, even our best plans may lead us to destruction.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Hello, dear listeners. You're listening to A to Z program, and I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today, we are talking about principles of friendship. Now, I was talking about something that's very important in accordance to principles of friendship, and that is how to be a successful friend. When you are being friends with someone, when you are being friends with someone in your life, you have a partner who you consider as your friend, how can you be that successful friend? What are the things that you need to do to be a successful friend in life? Now, relations with others is among the most important social art. Most of the people neglect this part of relation. Thus, they fail in gaining friends, and their relationship with others will be turned into problems and conflicts. What am I trying to say here? I'm trying to say that relations with others is among the most important social art. It's something that you need to have an art into. You need to, you know, give your body, yourself, your soul, your mind into. It's not just something that we take easily. Day-to-day life, we have friends. We take it so easily. We take it for granted. You see that this guy, he's my friend. Do you know him? No. Where did you meet him? I think we met on the way. We met on the road. So you don't know him, then how are you trusting him to be in your life? How are you trusting him to sit with you on the same table, to sit with you in the same room? He might be a harmful person to you in the future. So relations need to be considered like art and not just be taken easily, be taken like as if it's nothing, to be taken for granted. You need to take it with heaviness. You need to take it with care.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z program from IRIB English Radio. And we are talking about the principles of friendship. I've been talking about for the past few minutes. I was talking about how to be a successful friend. What do you need to do? We say that one of the things you need to consider from the very beginning when you are starting your relationship with someone, one of the things to consider is trying to make that particular relationship, check on it, such do research, do checkups, do questioning, ask them who they are, how they live, why do they live the way they live, how can they change one of the few things that they're not doing right in their lives. So here what we are trying to say, dear listeners, is that one of the things that we need to consider while wanting to be successful friends, to be friends of people, is that we need to be so cautious on our choices of friends. This is because most of us lack the knowledge of seeking friends and how to deal with them. Indeed, psychological studies and day-to-day experiences, as well as the guidance of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam and his holy progeny, that is the 12 Imams alayhi wasallam, decorates us with guidance and ways of seeking friends and how to associate with them. Now, all these teachings, they're making us to be good people, to be good partners to our friend. All these teachings and guidance show that a selfish person will never attract friends towards himself. And even if he gets them, he will lose them quickly. Why? Because he's selfish. And again, he never did his research so well, because he doesn't like for them what he likes for himself. Now, my dear friends, today, all I want you to notice, all I want you to take care of, all I want you to, you know, to digest, is that whenever we are choosing friends, we need to be so careful. We need to make sure that we know who they are. We need to make sure that we do our very good research before choosing them. Inshallah, till next time, thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Age is just a number when it comes to pursuing your goals. That's what 98-year-old Italian man Giuseppe Paterno has proven. Paterno has become the oldest university graduate in his country for the second time. In July 2020, he was graduated in history and philosophy from the University of Palermo. 2 years on, he's now got a master's degree in the same subjects. Paterno grew in a poor family in Sicily and always had a desire for learning, but he was unable to go to university at a young age. He finished high school aged 31, 6 years after he got married. Paterno's love to study or for study never stopped, making him enter the university in his 90s.
Geologists are rejoicing over a new discovery. A 290 million old fossil forest has accidentally been found in southern Brazil. A team of geologists had been sent to the state of Paraná to investigate the rocks there. To their surprise, they were able to find over 160 logs of lycophytes, an extinct variety of the vascular plant subgroup. It's quite a rare occurrence that a large number of fossils of the plant were found preserved in upright position for such a long time. The forest itself was discovered in 2018 when a street was being constructed over there. So far, only two other similar collections have been found in smaller forest areas of Brazil and Argentina. summer heat is here, and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pairi d'Aiza Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool, so we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it. The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. Some rescue stories are tragic, but this one has a happy ending. A stranded elephant and her calf have been pulled out of a drainage hole in a dramatic rescue mission during monsoon rains in Thailand. The mother elephant was guarding her calf that had fallen into a golf course drain hole when rescuers arrived. Vets had to use tranquilizers to subdue the frantic mother, but on her way down, she hit her head on a concrete block, knocking her unconscious as she fell into the muddy cavity. Rescuers used a crane to lift her out. It took two men jumping up and down on her chest to resuscitate her. Meanwhile, a digger was brought in to move the muddy earth and create a ramp for the calf to climb out. It took the team more than 3 hours to finish the operation. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but Over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach to lay their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program.
The more scientists make progress in space exploration, the more they get persuaded to delve into the mysteries of the universe. Now, the release of stunning full-color images from deep in the cosmos has put astronomers on the edge of their seats. NASA has unveiled high-resolution pictures from its James Webb telescope, which is the largest space-based observatory ever launched. The images took 2 weeks to render from raw telescope data. The $9 billion infrared James Webb was launched on Christmas in 2021. It reached its destination in solar orbit nearly 1 million miles from Earth a month later. Then the telescope underwent months-long process to unfurl all of its components. James Webb is now finely tuned and fully focused. The telescope is expected to shed light on the life cycles on planets of planets and galaxies.
The International Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival has drawn fashion designers from Iran and around the world. The designs displayed are trendy and at the same time they conform to the Islamic dress code. Yusuf Jalali has this report.
It's the Iranian fashion's biggest day. The 11th Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival brought under one roof fashion designers from across Iran and some other Muslim nations to step up their designs.
I have participated here as a fashion designer. I am so happy to be a part of this event because it acts as a platform that links designers to producers and it helps like promote quality design in the market.
This festival is a major event in the Islamic world's fashion industry because it helps promote fashionable clothes that conform to Islamic guidelines.
A typical Iranian woman wears a button-up coat called manto and a scarf covering the head. Some others wear a piece of cloth called chador, which covers the body from head to toe. One of the challenges Iranian fashion designers have to deal with is to tailor their designs to Islamic dress code or hijab while keeping them trendy.
Clouds represent the identity of a nation. As a designer, my mission is to design clouds that best represent the dresser's nationality and their culture. At the same time, the aesthetic aspect of the garment need to catch the attention. I think this is an ultimate artistry if accomplished.
Smuggling is another persisting problem in the Iranian clothing industry. Out of the $8 billion annual turnover of Iran's garment industry, a whopping $5 billion is supplied through smuggling, say activists here. Experts say one of the reasons smuggling has the lion's share in Iran's clothing market is that it's more cost-effective to import foreign clothes rather than produce them domestically.
We are making our best efforts to push down the production costs, including the associated taxes, in order to promote designs that reflect our Islamic and Iranian identities, opposed to Western designs that seek to dominate global markets.
With all the actors in Iran's fashion industry present in the Fajr Festival, the event is seen as a place to highlight and address the challenges, with the aim to provide the stage for Iranian fashion activists to shine in the domestic market.
It might seem contradictory when we would associate fashion with the Islamic dress code, but it's the art of a fashion designer that sews traditions to style and designs clothes that are both stylish and hijab. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
As infections soar in the third major coronavirus wave this year, British experts say COVID may never settle down into a seasonal cycle. We have prepared for you an article written by Hannah Devlin. The piece is titled, "The Way It's Playing Out is Unexpected. UK Faces Up to Changing Waves of COVID." A startling proportion of the UK population will be cooped up in their bedrooms, having the strange experience of nursing a fever and sore throat in July, as COVID infections continue to soar in the third major wave this year. For most, this will be an unpleasant inconvenience rather than a tragedy. But with a fourth wave expected in the autumn, a fifth potentially kicking off by Christmas, and experts saying that COVID may never settle down into a seasonal cycle, some are questioning whether this steady grind of illness is sustainable. Seasonal flu has been a benchmark for COVID since the earliest phase of the pandemic, and in the spring, a threshold was crossed, and COVID became less deadly than seasonal flu for all age groups. This was good news, of course. However, the impact of an illness on society also depends on how many people are infected and how often. Many had assumed by this point Britons might be at least heading towards a more regular pattern of infection with COVID, in which they would endure a few tough months during the winter months and forget it for the rest of the year. Instead, the reverse appears to be occurring. Dr. Stephen Kister, an epidemiologist at Harvard University, said, The way that the pandemic has played out and is continuing to play out is unexpected. Dr. Stephen Kistler and colleagues published a highly influential paper in April of 2020 that predicted that seasonal resurgences of COVID could occur as far into the future as 2025. For many in the scientific community, this was a coin drop moment that provided a glimpse of what lay behind the first few months of catastrophe and crisis, and sowed the seed of expectation that COVID would become seasonal. Dr. Stephen Kistler said, "We'd expected strong seasonal wintertime patterns where you don't see a lot of outside those winter months. This was because, with limited information to go on at the time, respiratory viruses have a natural advantage in the winter when people are cooped up indoors and where our immune systems are potentially less effective. And for many viruses, once a winter wave has passed, people remain immune for long enough to suppress infection until the following year." Two years on, Dr. Stephen Kistler's views have changed. He said, "We're in a different landscape now. The fact we're having such a rapid succession of variants, we seem to be racking them up at alarming speed, is the most surprising thing, and that's changed the way the waves look." He said, "I would have thought it would have reached a steady state by now. It seems the opposite is the case." Others have also been taken by surprise by this pattern. Professor Peter Openshaw, an immunologist at Imperial College London, said, "It does look as if the successive waves are getting closer together. They are actually becoming more frequent, with one piling in on top of the other." Professor Peter Openshaw added, "The change is that in the first year of the pandemic, new waves were driven by the emergence of more transmissible variants, such as Alpha and Delta, which spread infection more easily. Now, successive variants, including the latest BA.2.75 variant, nicknamed Centaurus, are being driven primarily by immune escape, the ability to infect people who have been vaccinated and infected, even fairly recently." The Australian Health Protection Principal Committee advised recently that infections of BA.4 or BA.5 variants could occur as early as 28 days after recovery from a previous COVID-19 infection. He said, "It almost seems as if the rate of replacement of new variants has accelerated," adding, "There is a shift in what's driving evolution." Each COVID wave no longer brings in a shockingly high death toll, but it is still felt across the United Kingdom. In recent days, school attendance in England fell to the lowest level since January, with nearly one in five secondary pupils absent and 8% of teachers off work. Hospitals, already trying to process massive surgery backlogs, are coming under immense strain due to staff absences, with 26,874 NHS staff off work for COVID-related reasons last week. Ambulance